Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges. That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on...
on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
Opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi examines Star Wars Rebels through a critical lens. On today's show, we will be discussing Empire Day, the 6th episode in Season 1. Returning to Rebels Reaction is Craig Dickinson of Coffee with Kenobi and Star Wars in the Classroom. Craig writes Rebels Reconnaissance, the official review of each episode of Rebels for Coffee with Kenobi, and we are honored to have him in the Coffee with Kenobi family. Welcome, Craig.
Thanks, guys. Good to be back.
You bet. I probably should have said welcome back. This is what your... Is this your fourth show with us or third?
I think it's the fourth. Yeah, this is the third Rebels Reactions that I've done. So we did an early one when they first started to roll out some of the character videos.
That's right.
Yeah. Before we even knew who Sabine and Hera were. So.
Exactly.
Back in the day, yeah.
Back in the day. So this is going to be an interesting episode because it is the first two-parter that we've seen for Rebels so far.
Yeah.
And it ends in a cliffhanger, which we'll talk about. And it's also the first time that I don't immediately know what my grade is. So I'm looking forward to discussing it. You too?
Yeah, I haven't written anything down yet, so I'm really up in the air.
Oh, do you usually write down your grades?
Yeah, I do.
Wow. Well, look at that. We learned something new. I didn't know that either. I just sort of envision it. And Craig, do you already have a grade in your head before we won't reveal it?
I don't.
Oh, good. Good deal. All right, well, let's just start with our overall opinions of Empire Day, and I'll go first on this one. I love the episode. I love the cliffhanger idea that happens at the end. I like what we learn about Ezra, and I'm not sure where else I want to go with it because I'm interested in our discussion. I think there's a lot going on, but there's not a lot going on. And we'll talk about that sort of as we progress with our discussion. What about you, Craig? What about you?
I liked it a lot. I was very interested to see basically everybody that we've been introduced to in the show came back in this one, with the exception of Visago, but like all the bad guys showed up, which was kind of interesting. And you did start to get a lot of information about Ezra. And I did not know that it was going to be a two-parter. I tried not to pay attention to any of the extra stuff beforehand, and so when it ended, I was like, "Oh my goodness, this is the end," because a lot of them have to this point wrapped things up really quickly. And I thought, "Oh, maybe they'll just get away," and then they didn't. I was like, "Oh, that's so cool!" So there's more to come. So I like that a lot.
And Corey, what about you?
Yeah, I think I similar to Craig's feelings was as nice to see the gang all together and working as a cohesive unit. It's nice that I feel like we're in the sixth episode. I feel like, you know, we get to know everybody so far and we're just kind of, we're going along with their day-to-day interactions and kind of how they live life. And it's nice to be able to have that feeling. I don't feel like I'm like, oh, who's that character? I know everybody, and we can kind of get to see you know, how they do things on Lothal too. It seems like we haven't been to Lothal too many times as far as, you know, the planet core itself, or the, I even call it the downtown city, whatever, one of the bigger hubs.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think it was thrilling. There's some fun chases. Again, the cliffhanger ending was a shock to me as well. I was like, I mean, usually I'm like hitting, like tapping my screen to see how much time is left. I'm like, 'cause I'm excited to see, you know, where the end is. I'm like, oh, it's going to wrap up really fast. And then, like you said, it was just like, boom, done. I'm like, what? And I'm like, no, we got to see the next episode. Let's do this. So
yes.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
One of the consistent things about Rebels so far is that when they're done, I don't want them to be over. And that's a lot of fun.
Definitely.
Before we jump into the heart of our discussion, have you all noticed that it's pronounced either Lothal or Lothal? Have you noticed how the different characters pronounce it differently?
Yeah, it's switching around. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, it makes it a little more realistic. It adds verisimilitude, Craig, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would. There's definitely verisimilitude in that.
Certainly. All right, so the beginning, Kanan and Ezra are having a little bit of training, and I wrote down a number of things that Kanan says, and I'm just going to read them. And my apologies if I didn't type it down verbatim, but I did the very best I could. Kanan, Ezra gets a little frustrated because he's trying to tame this wild, cute little beast.
It's a Furby.
And it's not working, yeah. And he says, give me your lightsaber and I'll make the connection. And Kanan, Kanan looks at him and says, excuse me? I remember a very similar scene with Ahsoka and Anakin early on in season one of the Clone Wars, but Anakin didn't make the kind of rebuttal that Kanan did. So he makes the point of, you are connected to everything. To discover that, you have to let your guard down. You have to be willing to attach to others. Attach to others.
Mm-hmm.
If you hang on to your past, if you always try to protect yourself, you'll never be a Jedi. Craig, what'd you make of all that?
Well, immediately he's talking about attachments, and that obviously it rings bells when you start thinking about Jedi and attachments, and that being counter to everything we heard in the prequel trilogy. But at the same time, it's very reminiscent of Yoda's instruction to Luke about feeling all of the things that are around him, the rock and the trees and all of those things too. So it's kind of a weird blend of the two of those things. And so it does jive with things that we've heard Jedi say before. But it did kind of strike me, like he's saying, talking about making connections with people. And hey, that's kind of different. How did he learn that?
What about you, Corey?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's always been a constant with Jedi to make a connection through, you know, friends and just people as they interact with each other. And it seems like that seems to be a good point of connection for their day-to-day activities. And it seems that, you know, obviously Ezra's been alone for a long time and he needs to have those connections, you know, especially even with the team himself. He's been a little bit distant, things like that, and hard to, you know, warm up to them. But I think, you know, as he's just training, and I'm so glad we got to see this training too. And we've been seeing it here and there. And it's nice to kind of get a little inside look on how, you know, how Kanan kind of approaches things as far as, you know, what any other Jedi Master would do. And as we've learned so far, he's trying. Maybe he's not doing it perfectly, but he is trying and trying to do his best. And I wonder if, too, it's like maybe some of these lessons weren't even taught to him. So he's kind of like, I'm going to just work the basics here and go with that and see where Ezra kind of steps in. So it's a nice little interaction between these two guys. I'm always excited to see them relate to each other as far as the Jedi training goes. But I also, like you said, the attachments was very exciting to hear that, because it's something we don't normally hear from a Jedi.
Well, it also shows me, too, the more and more we talk about attachments, the more tricky it gets to try to discern what's going on. And it almost, I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking that the Jedi, Jocasta Nu and the Jedi Temple, they don't have a thesaurus, because they're using the word attachment frequently, but they don't always mean attachment. Sometimes they mean like obsession, or sometimes they mean, basically just zeroing in on something and not allowing for alternative methods of compassion. Here he really literally means, yes, connect, like you said, Craig, and be a part of like the rock, the tree, the ship. And then what I really like, and this is just like a beautiful a beautiful scene because, you know, don't hang on to your past. Don't always try to protect yourself. You'll never be a Jedi. And you could substitute the word Jedi here for you'll never be who you are meant to be. You never, and that's a wonderful thing. We talk a lot about the violence and some of the things that go on in Rebels, but there's nothing more than I want my son and my sons to learn. It's don't hold on to failure. Let that stuff go, or you're never going to be who you need to be.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else about this here? There's also one little thing where he says, step outside of yourself, focus on another being. Kanan is teaching Ezra empathy.
And compassion too. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of themes like that too. And obviously, you know, it's as we get into the episode, there's some more going on Ezra's mind, I think. So I wonder if, you know, if it was a different day or something else was going on that he might respond differently.
I think so.
You know, obviously, I'm sure we'll talk about as we go on that, you know, his mind is clouded at the time, I think. It feels like it's preoccupied with, the events of the day. So it seems like maybe, you know, obviously he's not cluing into the Jedi training at the moment.
Well, we had talked on a previous one where Matt was on our second one. We talked about droids in distress, and we talked about post-traumatic stress disorder. And I don't know if we quite see that with Ezra to that degree that we do with Zeb and what happened to him and his people. But we definitely see some really challenging hang-ups, things that are very difficult that a young boy who's 15 years old shouldn't have to deal with, but he has. Before we get into that, I want to talk about when they go into that little mini cantina, and I'm choosing the word cantina because, you know,
that's what
that
it
just
is.
Seems more appropriate,
exactly.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even the way that Hera is sitting at the table with her hands under her chin, very, very Han Solo. Hmm. And we see racial profiling with the Rodian, and we see a lot of propaganda. You know, the Thai pilots, which I thought was interesting that it was Thai pilots that were walking around, but they just sort of parked their horses or Thai fighters right outside, and then the holonet must be played at all times. I found a lot of interesting things going on there. It's sort of what we expected to see when we knew that this was going to have a lot of similarities to rebellions throughout world history, but certainly on full display here.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say the cantina itself, that scene was, I think, was really well done. And the cantina must be like, the way it's laid out, it's the lighting is low and it's everybody's kind of grumbling to themselves and having their drinks and conversations and whatnot. And there's a blue almost shade over the whole scene itself. It seems like it's a downer. Everybody's not really excited about the day. You know, the TV wasn't even on. The whole idea was like a throwback to the original trilogy as way, you know, the characters are situated and stuff like that. But I also kind of felt like it was a darker scene than what we see in A New Hope. It wasn't as jovial than what we was really celebrating anything. They were kind of just to themselves and kind of low in their drinks. And so it was kind of a sobering scene, I think. Not to make a pun.
Well, yeah, it's like the you know, the people are aware of what the day is. And they're not happy about it. I mean, even though the Imperial guys come in and say, you have to celebrate this and put the holonet on and, you know, we're going to have a parade and all this stuff. And it's like they're kind of aware this is going to happen, I think, because it's an annual thing. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they're bracing themselves for that.
I was very surprised that the Thai pilots let the bartender off so easy, because we've seen it earlier on in the show, and in the very first episode, The Sparks of Rebellion, the quote-unquote movie, some Ugnaughts, you know, voice some frustration, and they're arrested on the spot and taken away. So, but this guy can openly mock the Holonet and the Imperial procedures, and then they just say, we're done here, and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you? I mean, half of me thought, are they going to come back later? Are we going to see some repercussions of this? Is he going to blow up the cantina? I was a little surprised by the inconsistency there.
Yeah, I was too. When he talked back to the guy, that was a little bit and then not have the repercussions from that. That was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, he was a sassy pants.
With a sweet translator on his neck.
Yes, I noticed that as well. Well, you, I mean, that helps when you're attending bar.
Yeah.
Speak the language.
Yeah.
All right, let's go into it's Empire Day. Did we mention Empire Day? But that's not only is this the title of the episode, but that is the day that they are, quote, celebrating. I don't know why I'm saying the word quote so much. Verisimilitude. Did you all notice? Of course, you both did. The Imperial March playing, and Empire
yes.
Day.
Yes. Yeah,
this,
be, yeah.
this
yes.
becomes meta.
Yeah, it does. Yes,
as source music, which was amazing. Yeah, and I wrote that down for sure. I'm like, that's really cool that they're actually listening to it in the context of the parade.
And I love, and I'm certainly not musically inclined. I mean, I know how to use an iPod and a stereo, but I thought it was really, really cool the way that this version of the Imperial March made it sound very much like 40s propaganda music. I thought that was a beautiful touch.
Yeah.
Hats off to Kevin Kiner for that.
Yeah, what he's else about? A fantastic job.
He really has. What else about? You want to talk about musical cues? Let's rewind a little bit before we start our discussion. Craig, you had mentioned to us something interesting that happened with Sabine when she's watching Kanan and Ezra train.
Yeah, just as we see, you know, Hera and Zeb walk into the town, and then Sabine pauses and she looks out into the landscape there and sees Kanan and Ezra training, and she kind of lingers a little bit, and then you hear just the beginning of Leia's theme, just a tiny little bit, and that being a romantic theme just kind of makes you wonder just how things are going in her head. And then to see Kanan and Ezra talking about making connections and opening themselves up to people, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into that. It's very possible. But the placement of Leia's theme is...
It's not an accident. Yeah.
No, exactly. The nothing with the musical cues is accidental. So that just kind of made me go, I wonder what that's about. And then, of course, having Kanan and Ezra's conversation about attachments in the past was clearly foreshadowing for what was going to happen later in the show. So you know, Everything's intentional. So it just kind of makes how are these pieces going to fit together later?
And there's that connection. She's noticing that they're very much like father and son in this. I think that's safe to say. He even when he's joking around later, or not necessarily joking around, but pretending like he's just some buffoon in the streets cheering some fireworks. They even use father and son as terms when they're talking to one another. I think that Leia's theme too, it's almost like a female version of the Force theme sometimes is how it's been portrayed. And Leia's the original strong female character in Star Wars, so it almost makes me think that Sabine is going to play an even bigger role in this overall series than I expected. And like you said, it's possible reading too much into it, but come on, that's what we do. It's fun.
Exactly.
Corey, what about you? Anything with that scene?
Yeah, you know, when it opened up and they're training, we're obviously cued in on them and their conversation, but you know, we see Hera and Zeb kind of walk off onto another mission, and kind of got me thinking. I was like, "Is this?" And I'm trying to place it right off the bat. I'm trying to like, "Okay, what's this whole episode going to be about?" And you know, it's the title itself, Empire Day. So it's I don't know what that means. And as we get into the episode, we kind of see that they've got something planned, and you know, obviously they're going off and doing their mission. Then we get to the cantina, and they're there again, seemingly having their back in a sense and still staying in kind of formation. They'll have they're very, you know, tight in their stuff, but yeah, the musical cues are always a good thing. I think we've seen this throughout all the episodes. And it just shows a tight knit group of who the rebels are. I think it really ties them together as far as, the lookout for one another and be able to just, combine together as a family unit.
Is this the first time we've heard the word Palpatine in Rebels?
I think so.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because
the
Empire
definitely the first time we saw him.
Yeah, a distant shot of him in the Senate, and Empire Day is the day when they celebrate that the Empire comes into power, and no wonder when it is so full of malaise, because it's not a good thing. But you know, as good propaganda will do, the holonet must be played at all times. We play the Imperial March, and then they feature a brand new tie.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that scene where that tie is destroyed and different things that happen. We already mentioned Kanan's ruse with the stormtrooper, and I was really impressed with Freddie Prinze Jr. in this, and the way way it was animated and the way he was talking. It reminded me of different scenes in Toy Story when Woody's going crazy or being really goofy.
Yeah, that
was a fun scene.
It was a lot of fun, and it was kind of interesting to see him pitch his voice a little differently. And
yeah,
really, he was really out of character, and I was like, "Oh, he's really overplaying this. He's either gonna get caught or, you know." And then of course Ezra runs up, and that was interesting that he was like, "Dad," that threw me off a little bit too. And to kind of save his bacon there a little bit, but but it was it's interesting that Freddie did a different kind of key in his voice there and played it up, and oh yeah, it was awesome, dude, sweet, you know, kind of the
like a rainbow, man.
Yeah, the rainbow. I was waiting for him to say double rainbow, man. It was awesome.
Me too. Triple rainbow. Yeah.
Okay, so then the Inquisitor shows up. And I love the Inquisitor.
Oh yeah.
And I remember Pablo Hidalgo saying early on that whenever he does show up, it's serious. So I'm assuming he was there because it's Empire Day, but it seems sort of like a waste of time for him to be there because he's got a more important mission to the Empire. But you know, he's so force sensitive, or appears to be, that he's always on the lookout, on the move. So Zeb shows up and he wants to take care of Agent Callus. And Kanan says, look, if you want to help us out, really, then take out that guy. So he points the gun. He's got a wide open shot from not that far away. And he misses him. And Zeb is honor guard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay. Again, I think it would have been cooler, and maybe this is just splitting hairs, and that's fine. But I'm assuming that the Force allowed the Inquisitor to dodge it, or did Kanan really not have did Zeb really not have his heart into it? I mean, at least block the shot or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. The other thing too is like he really was going after Agent Callus, and that seemed like, and then he kind of changed his direction, and I was kind of like, oh, I kind of like stole his moment a little bit, you know?
Yeah,
from previous episode, we know that's
probably more that.
So he was kind of like, meh, I'll give a shot, and just didn't, it was half-hearted, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, this guy that wants to, it shows how much respect he has for Kanan, really, because he holds Callus responsible for the extermination of his people, but he respects Kanan even more than his need for revenge, which is part of it what makes him a hero and not a villain, but that's a slippery slope.
Yeah. Do you guys notice, too, that the Inquisitor was basically out in the open and just like walk. I mean, it seems like I was like, oh man, he seems like he should be in kind of the shadows. And like,
I agree. Sort of bad.
I was like, why was he just kind of like, oh, well, let's just chase after them? And I think that's kind of Agent Callus' role. I mean, I feel like
I did too.
Inquisitor didn't necessarily need to be there. But
I agree.
I don't know. It was just me.
What about you? What about you, Craig?
Yeah, that was a little bit odd. I mean, and the fact that the woman, what's her name again? Makith Tua is just talking to him like it's nothing. It's like, this guy seemed like he was a guy who, again, you know, it's a big deal when he shows up and he kind of just runs his own thing. You know, he's basically answers to Vader and that's about it. And it's almost like he's just rubbing shoulders, just hanging out for the parade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a little bit odd. Unless, you know, later on we see him in the new tie, and maybe that he's there to take possession of the tie. Maybe that's his.
Well, that could be.
That's true.
His role in all of this, and maybe we'll find out more in the second half. But
it's a gorgeous tie too, by the way. How the sides, the wings, I guess, for lack of a better word, how they fold down. Did you notice that?
Like a sandwich.
Like a sandwich. A sandwich of evil. Yeah, it was really, really neat. And then it gets blown up right away because Sabine is working her magic. And she's just so important to the team. And I had this down for later, but let's just talk about it now. She's highly intelligent. I mean, with technology, with weaponry, with strategy. And she also speaks multiple languages.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the real deal. If she was around, and who knows, but if she was around at the time of A New Hope, who knows what would have happened because she's a legitimate threat. She's she's raising the bar all the time for me as far as what a Star Wars character can be, because she's very nuanced and she brings a lot to this table.
She definitely does. And I also think, too, it's like they mentioned that she was training with the Empire, I think it was two episodes ago.
Right.
I kind of have them in the back of my mind, you know, as it's playing on in the episode. I think, what if she was on the other side? She would be quite the handful to, you know, she's obviously got her stuff down. I mean, she's a little bit, I mean, maybe immature a little bit at her age, but other than that, I mean, she's Well, I mean, I think it's immature as far as her 8 years of age.
Well, isn't she 2 years old? If Ezra's 15, isn't she 17?
I get, yeah.
Again, I wish I didn't lose my visual guy. It would have been really helpful.
Well, see, Ezra just turned 15, so I think wasn't she 2 years old? So I said she's 16, maybe. He 16, was 14, 17. She's 16. 16, yeah. Going on 17?
Yeah.
A little Sound of Music in there?
Indeed. Speaking of Germans...
Yeah, see, it all comes back to the Nazis.
That's right.
Craig's all about it.
I hate those guys, as any of us say.
Again.
Hate those guys.
Yeah.
She's just a interesting. She's got a lot going on, and like you said, Corey, there's something about her that would be a real problem for the opponent. She's invaluable. They're all invaluable in their own way, but she is standing out with the last few episodes to me. Let's shift our attention to Ezra. We found out what's happened to his parents. Not fully. Maybe the second part of this will show us. But his parents have been gone for 8 years, and he's been living on his own since he was 7. That's a long time to be by yourself, which explains his resilience, which explains his frustration. It also explains his desire to be in a family unit. And everyone has that desire in them, whether they want to face that or not. Empire Day is his birthday. Let's talk about Ezra, what we learn about him in this. And Craig, why don't you start?
Well, one of the things that I thought was fascinating was that they reveal through Sibo, the guy that the Rodian who they've been looking for, the Imperials have been looking for, that Ezra's parents were rebels.
Yeah.
And that they were broadcasting, you know, they're doing an underground broadcast against the Empire.
I like to think that it was a podcast.
Yeah.
There you go.
Exactly. Well, it was a Star Wars podcast for sure. So the fact that he kind of comes from that stock, you know, his kind of his destiny was to be a rebel, I thought was kind of interesting. And I wonder if at what age, you know, the Force sensitivity comes out. Did they know where was one of his parents or somebody else in his family lineage Force sensitive? There's so many questions that, I mean, you got a lot of answers, but like it happens in Star Wars a lot, as soon as you start getting answers, you have a lot more questions.
Right.
But I thought that was really cool that they actually gave us, hey, guess what? This is his birthday. Here's the names of his parents. They did this. They were hiding this guy. They were friends with the Sibo guy. And so I thought that was fascinating. Another thing, just real fast, I wanted to drop in. The fact that it was his birthday. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys saw that Leland Chee tweeted out the fact that he is, in fact, 2 days older than, or a couple days older than Luke and Leia. So that's kind of, that's canonized now. That
No kidding.
They're basically, because those guys would have been born, you know, a day or two after Palpatine declares.
That's true. I never thought about that. Yeah. So they're all in the same... Isn't that that's
generation?
Cool.
Yeah.
So they're all in the same, you know, middle school right now.
I wonder if they'll do another version of the special edition where Ezra will show up next to Biggs. Hey,
And Tosche Station.
That's right. So I did manage to look at the end and pause as we talked about earlier. But Mira, M-I-R-A, is Ezra's mother, and Ephraim, which sounds very biblical, is his dad. Craig, I knew you'd caught that. I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up and figure out exactly what the reference is for that. And
well, it's spelled Ephraim.
Right.
I don't think it's spelled that way in the Bible. But Canaan isn't spelled K-N-A-N either.
No.
But it's, again, names, music, none of it's accidental. Ezra, one of the things that Ezra hears his father say is, we have to stand up for people in need, especially if it's against the Empire, which begs the question, what did the Empire do to Ephraim? I mean, I'm sure they did something. They don't seem to care who they offend or who they hurt or who they take things away from. And eventually, when you knock down someone enough, they're going to get up. And it almost seems like, as the Jedi, one could say, perhaps self-sabotaged by the way that they trusted or overestimated or tended to, you know, overanalyze to the point that they weren't effective. It seems like the Empire is beginning their end, even though they've been around for 15 years. You can see why people just couldn't take it anymore and rose up against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, yeah, the scene too, it plays out interesting that he's at this little small little bunker underneath their house, I guess. And that like you said, Dan, that little quote, we have to stand up for people in need, especially those if it's against the Empire. And it kind of threw me back into a Spider-Man moment where Uncle Ben kind of relays, you know, great power comes great responsibility. And it's kind of that same kind of gesture a little bit. You know, it's his son, and he's looking to instill knowledge into his life. And like you said, Craig, I mean, what has been done to them as far as, you know, in the past has, you know, hurt them in some way. So it's interesting to see. And obviously, with this cliffhanger, hopefully we get to find out more.
So we also learned some interesting things. We learned through Zeebo and Sabine, again, using her technological savvy, she uses her skills, and we learned that there's the 5-year plan for Lothal, and we get to see some cool images, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
TIE bombers, TIE interceptors. We get to see a version of the Imperial shuttle, and then we get to see AT-ATs.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm sure have made Mike Pilot very happy.
Absolutely.
That was very cool. Very, very cool. Anything else about their 5-year plan? Or I don't speak or read Aurabesh, but I wonder what it said on those little images.
Yeah, the 5-year plan was interesting, I think, because it's like, why are they just now starting this 5-year plan? If, you know, they've been there for, what, 15 years? If, you know,
we don't know that, actually. We're not sure how long they've been in Lothal.
I don't know.
If they've been gone for 8 years, then probably.
Yeah. And you know, I wonder if it's just maybe a not such a, you know, I don't know what you call it, inhabitable planet, kind of similar to Tatooine, where it's, you know, in chunks. And now they're just like ramping up these new TIE fighters and looking to, you know, make mass production on those. I think there was a comment about that as far as wanting to go further into, you know, getting things started up and, you know, spreading out their meanness.
Yeah. You know, one thing that just occurred to me too is, you know, who's the guy who's making the plans? It's Palpatine, who has, you know, we've seen in lots of media that he has the gift of foresight. And so he's planning for something that maybe he knows is coming.
But as we saw in the novel Tarkin, since everything's connected, he knows everything that's going on. But as far as some of the specifics, he may let some of the lessers, if you will, look at that. So who knows? I don't think it's the Inquisitor. Maybe this is, I don't think it's Kallus either, but maybe it's the Taskmaster and who we see in everything. I don't know. Maybe there is a Grand Moff involved too. Surely we'll see Tarkin at some point.
I hope so.
I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the gang. Let's talk about the fight scene with Kanan and Kallus. It features one of the neater images I think we've seen. We've learned a lot about Kanan. He is someone that when this show started, I was a little worried about because I wanted to love him as soon as I saw that image and the Cowboy Jedi thing that we've talked about. And then I read A New Dawn and I was not particularly sold on him, but I learned that he was sort of growing into who he was trying to be or who he needed to be. And he... he's not always the star in every episode, but what he does matters. What he says has a lot of weight. There's no wasted breath when it comes to Kanan. And there's not really any wasted movement either, but he's very slick. He seems to, not quite the way that Anakin did, he seems to enjoy his gifts and the fact that he is unleashing his lightsaber more readily than he ever has. He's incredible with it. And that scene when he jumps up onto the ramp of the ghost and he's blocking the blast, I thought that was a wonderful scene.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of Mace Windu jumping out of the balcony and Geonosis blocking things left and right.
Very much so, but even more graceful.
Yeah. It makes me think too that maybe he want to leave that lightsaber attached.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot more like he's gonna have to bust this, because the second time I watched him, like, I know he has his lightsaber, but it's not attached, right? How fast does he does it? And he whips it together pretty fast, but it's like a guy could have shot you in the time that you were clicking right. that thing together.
And do you wonder why he doesn't just rush Agent Callis and just take care of him right away?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And maybe that's something I just need to let that kind of thing go, because true, but it doesn't act like a kid's show.
I know.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. It's that the time he has to put together the lightsaber, the click and the switching it on, and it seems like there's a gap, and as far as like, yeah, just leave it together. Everybody knows you're a Jedi now. Let's just...
Yeah, the jig is up. Let's just keep it together. But then when he's walking around, I guess the real reason, let's be honest, is when he's walking around Lothal, is if he was carrying a lightsaber on his belt, he could not be incognito anywhere.
No.
But at this point, how can the Rebels be incognito?
Yeah, I feel like they're very
They've done
broad.
A lot of damage, and surely someone has captured their image in some way, shape, or form.
Well, they have Ezra's
they
image.
Are pretty good at hiding, but still.
The Inquisitor has Ezra's image. We've seen that. And obviously passing it around and trying to get names and dates and facts. And, you know, so it's building to something, I think.
Maybe, oh, it is.
And maybe they're not necessarily, you know, there's something going on. And then... So that's, I think that just goes along with the storytelling as far as building us up to see what happens.
And speaking of the Inquisitor, it seems to reason that much like in Rise of the Old Masters, when he sees his prey, he knows they're there, but he almost seems to enjoy the mm-hmm. chase, and he's got other things on his mind, but he's so calculating to the degree that he knows he's going to get after them eventually. But he doesn't use like any force abilities to run after them. He glares at them, and he's just very much analyzing everything that happens. I have a feeling that at some point they're going to find themselves in a situation that's going to be extremely difficult to get out of because of the steps the Inquisitor takes. He's impressing me more and more. They say a lot, again, much like Kanan, there's nothing waste when it comes to the Inquisitor. And I think that's why we were a little thrown at first that he showed up at this celebration for Empire Day. When you're thinking, isn't he wasted?
Yeah, I think it's going to be it's a two-parter. I think they introduced him to play it out in the second part maybe and do more. But he obviously has the skills. He can fly. We didn't know he has the piloting skills. That was pretty cool. He threw on his awesome biker helmet.
Yeah, I love that helmet.
Let's talk about the helmet.
Yeah, it was kind of like an old knight helmet if you want to, like the visor and everything. Very cool.
Well, those Padawans got giant heads, so
yeah. Yes,
at least the ones in Rebels do. Yeah, so he's going to need a special head. But yeah, the V, it looked very much like a knight. Good call on that, Corey.
Thanks. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I didn't think about that. And just the grooves in it. And at first you wonder, why does he even need one? But everybody's in a TIE fighter cockpit has something over them, unless they're in the atmosphere, like when Ezra... and Zeb stole the TIE fighter a few episodes before that. What is there anything else that we can kind of glean from looking at that helmet? And I mean, there's Menace. You can't really tell that it's him in it, even though everyone knows that it's him. But there's the Inquisitor does not seem to have any hubris. And I don't think you could say that about someone like Count Dooku. Sorry, Chad. Or someone like Darth Maul who has arrogance in a very different sort of way, but the Inquisitor seems very, very comfortable in his own skin for a Sith, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I think again, going back to the fact that names always mean something. I mean, Inquisitor, just that name alone, it has, you know, the connotation of being very intellectual and very methodical, and he's
inquisitive.
Exactly. Going back to, he's not a Sith, but he kind of is. But that's another thing that separates him from the Sith, is that he's not ruled by his passions. You know, he's very by the book as far as what he does. Is everything is, like I said again, methodical. It's even walking to the TIE fighters. He's like, yep, just hold them up. We'll be there soon. Just walking, not rushing. Just
he never seems to get mad.
Nope.
Which we'd sort of heard hints of that as well before the show started, but. I find that interesting as well. And maybe that's one of the reasons why he's not Sith.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Interesting. It'll balance.
Be fun. Maybe no, I'll, he, I'll send another tweet to Pablo and see if he responds.
It's too bad he's not on Twitter anymore.
I know. That was so fun. It was a lot of fun.
But you know, I think you hit on something there, Dan. I mean, the fact that he's not a passionate creature. He doesn't seem to be. And that's a source of power for the Sith. We've seen that repeatedly, and that's just not his MO. So,
and really, the fact that the way he carries himself, it's like he already understands what Ezra is trying to grasp, which is what Kanan talks about at the beginning. You know, let your guard down, be willing to attach. I mean, I don't know that he's willing to attach to anyone. He's got his own mission, and he obviously holds Vader and the Emperor in very high regard. And he's also older. And we don't know anything about his past or how he was trained. I'm assuming it was from Darth Vader, but who knows on that. And then we get our cliffhanger, which is, as mentioned at the top of the show, we haven't seen any two-parters, and we were always told that these were pretty much self-contained episodes, except for very special ones. And I'm very excited to see what's going to happen for part two of Empire Day, and who knows what the title will even be. In fact, maybe it's already been released. But I'm excited to see where this one goes. We do know that the big reveal at the end that Zeebo says, I know what happened to your parents. So we're going to find out. We don't know if they're alive. We don't know if they're dead. Are they in hiding? Are they imprisoned? We don't know. But presumably we're going to find out, and that is going to be very exciting to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So guys, go ahead, Corey.
I was going to say, just going back to Inquisitors, you guys talked about it. It just gets me thinking, like, you know, is he a type of guy that is not necessarily a Sith because he can, you know, he doesn't have that. Maybe they don't want him to be, you know, too much in control. They, you know, they're controlling him in a sense, the rule of two, in a sense where it's, I don't know, I was thinking about why you guys were talking, so.
Right.
Good discussion.
No, that lines up with what Pablo had said, too, that there's certain things that they have not told him. There's certain things they're withholding from him to keep that power and to not have to necessarily worry about him as a rival that would be knocking the other one of them off.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that'll be something that, hey, this is a good time to plug our next regular show where we're going to talk about the Sith.
There you go.
So while you're listening to this, if you have any thoughts or opinions on the Sith, their rule of two, and how do individuals like the Inquisitor circumvent or usurp that concept, let us know. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And guys, any last-minute thoughts or reflections on this show before we give it our grade? As we said at the top, again, there doesn't seem to be as much maybe to bring to the forefront of analysis, but I think we've done a very intriguing job of doing just that, just based on the little things with the characters. And while there's a lot of wonderful action in this episode, what's going on, again, the continual evolution of Kanan and Ezra's relationship, the very realistic portrayal of his studies, even if you really are interested in something and you really follow through with kids, they're going to be times when they're not into it or they're going to get frustrated and they're going to give up. That makes Ezra very human and very much like an adolescent would behave in such a situation. And I'm sure a lot of us are watching thinking, well, he's going to be a Jedi. Wasn't he any more into it? Well, because kids are kids. And if they're not great at something right away, they may sometimes give up or they may get frustrated. So overall, I enjoy the episode. I love that there's a cliffhanger aspect of it. And it's really, really hard. Perhaps maybe that's why it's so hard for me to grade it, because we don't have the whole story yet. It's like we are halfway through the story, halfway through the book. What about you guys? Last minute thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard. I almost want to give it an incomplete until I see the whole thing. Because really, it's one half of the, you know, the full episode at this point.
And maybe that's what we'll have to do. Maybe we could give it maybe a temporary grade and then sort of see what happens when the full product is turned in.
Yeah.
It's definitely passing.
It's definitely passing with high marks. Yeah. Corey, what about you? Any last minute thoughts or reflections? And Craig, if you have anything else to add to the whole episode too, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it was a great show. I enjoyed it. And the cliffhanger was a great way to end it, I think. I was glad it did that way. Didn't feel like I got robbed of anything. I'm excited to see the next episode. I mean, all the interactions were a lot of fun. The gang was all there. Everybody seemed to play their part perfectly. Like we've talked about, you know, everybody was doing it right on key and nobody was out of the character or anything like that. But I had this overall sense that I felt like this episode was a little bit out of order. I thought maybe this episode could have come earlier in the season, maybe. Besides, I think back to the the training episode where they went into the Empire training base, and I feel like there was a little like, oh, we jumped really, really far ahead in their time together as rebels, where this would have fit maybe a little bit better into that incoming part where Ezra gets to know the team, and this may be their first mission is this Empire Day, so we get to know a little bit more of Ezra. So I don't know if this is, obviously they're not playing him out of order, but I mean, it felt like a little bit out of order for me is just watching the episode itself.
Well, we do know that Clone Wars, they were made out of order from chronological sequence, but they've said that Rebels is not, but I completely get that, Corey. I very much got that vibe myself when I was watching that.
One thing that I liked about it a lot, it did in some ways, it kind of felt like a greatest hits of Rebels to this point. It's really been kind of calling back on a lot of things from original trilogy and prequel trilogy, but this seemed to be the first time that they really kind of hinted, remember this character, and they kind of just brought everybody back for this episode, which again kind of lent itself to the importance of the episode that, you know, all those people that had been guest starring earlier were all back. In this one, like, you're going to need to pay attention because we've brought everybody back for this one.
And who knows who's in the crowd that we didn't quite see, too.
Right.
I did see the clone trooper helmet in the cantina. Did you guys see
that? Yes, the original clone trooper helmet. I thought that was a nice little callback. And also, when they walked into the cantina, the Republic gunship was on the top of the building, too.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys see that?
I missed that. I'll have to check that out.
I have to go check it out, yeah.
Yeah, it's just right when they're walking through the door, it's right on top, which I thought was interesting. It's almost like they're literally, it's like a living tribute to the Republic, which is now the Empire. So again, even when something seems to be black and white, there's still so much gray.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, gentlemen, it's time. We're going to have to make some sort of a grade for this episode. And with the caveat that we could go back and adjust it perhaps. But in the interest of fairness, what would you grade this episode? We'll start with the teacher.
I'm going to go ahead and give it a solid, let's go B+.
Care to explain your rubric?
I think because, and this is, it's not really fair to penalize it this way, but I'm going to anyway. The fact that it didn't wrap things up, it ended abruptly, which is the nature of the cliffhanger. I understand that, but it really kind of just stopped so abruptly for me that it kind of sucked a little bit of the drama out for me. So now I've got to wait. So I guess I'm going to penalize it for making me wait.
Corey, what about you?
Yes. You know, as I read books, I'll sometimes post my reviews on Goodreads, and they've got a starring system on there. And as I read the book, I have this star system in my mind thinking, okay, what would I give it midway through the book or quarter way through the book? And I'm thinking 2 or 3 stars, you know, and by the end, it's, you know, wrapped up. And I usually give things, you know, as they was graded by the end, by the full idea of the book itself. And this kind of falls in that category for me. It's, you know, I'm in between grading it because, like Craig said, it's incomplete. I mean, it's nothing. The whole story's not there. But yeah, I'm gonna go. It was a good episode. I enjoyed everything. So I'm gonna go with a B+ as well. I was kind of debating about just a solid B, but I think a B+ because, like I said, you know, just through our conversations, there's a lot here. I mean, I'd be interested to go back and watch it again. It's just kind of take in more of the outside things. I was really watching the characters. I feel like I should have been watching more of the side things, and there should be more in this episode that we maybe didn't hit on. Maybe I don't know. I think there's a lot more into it, but I think we'll see a lot more on the next episode. So B+.
Fair enough. Well, I struggled a little bit with this one because I enjoyed the episode, but it did feel empty. And as you both mentioned rather eloquently, it's because we don't have the whole story yet, and we're going to learn a lot more as we progress with part 2 of Empire Day. And I think the thing for me, I'm going to give it an A-. And I really had no clue what I was going to give it. But to take it and penalize it for not having the whole story, which neither of you are doing that. But that would be very akin to looking at the Fellowship of the Ring and penalizing that because we don't see what happens to the ring. We don't have the whole story yet, and we know that it's out there, and we just have to wait and be patient. The thing, though, about a story and what, to me, the strength of the Harry Potter series is versus some other adolescent novels that are very popular series, Hunger Games, is that they're not, you know, are they self-contained stories? And I think you could argue this, it really isn't a self-contained story, but to be fair, it's not, it doesn't claim that it is. Novels, I'm sort of on a soapbox here, but novels on their own, if they're a part of a series, they should still have a beginning, middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. We've just seen the beginning of the climax. We haven't seen the beginning, middle, and end. So the promise that we have, like you both said, that this is like a greatest hits, I'm just going to stick with the A-.
Dan, can I challenge you a little bit?
Please do.
Empire Strikes Back. That was a cliffhanger.
Yes, it was.
How does that compare to this episode?
That's a great question. I think it compares because Empire has a beginning, middle, and an end, and we may not like what happens to the characters at the end, but they learn and they grow by the end of that of episode 5, and they're different at the end of that than they were at the beginning. So that, to me, is the big change. Craig, you agree?
Yeah. No, that's... I know that Joss Whedon disagrees with you, but
that's right.
No, it's true. There is a beginning, middle, and an end. And just because it ends on a down note, just because it doesn't end happily, doesn't mean that it doesn't end properly.
Sure. Whereas in the Hunger Games, none of them have an ending. But anyway,
you got to take it as one story, Dan.
Yes.
That's what my students say. Which is the favorite book? I say it's one story. You got to read it. And yeah. But yeah, I see your point.
But Harry Potter, H1 is true. One story, but they have a strong beginning, middle, and end.
No. And I will agree with you that Harry Potter is definitely a better book than book series than Hunger Games. But it's hard to top that. So
it is. And I will say that I think that Katniss is an outstanding female character, as strong as anybody in literature. So, but we digress. So. Thanks again, Craig, so much for being again on Rebels Reactions with us. We love to have you on as much as possible because you're our Rebels Reconnaissance guru and just an overall great guy. And it's a pleasure once again to share a cup of coffee with you.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun.
You bet. And tell our friends where they can find you if they want to say hello or ask you a question.
All right. Well, definitely first place to look would be Coffee with Kenobi, where I'm doing the weekly Rebels Reconnaissance for each new episode of Rebels. I'm also on Star Wars in the Classroom. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at InfluxMan, and I will get back to you any one of those ways.
That's right. And we'll put those in the show notes as always. And Craig, you do such a wonderful job with our reviews and that we just love seeing what you bring to the table. And it's fun to interact with you. And I know that you do such a great job with all the listeners, too, and we appreciate that. And we've been encouraging people who have their own reviews. They send us their reviews of each episode of Rebels every week, and it's wonderful, and they just get better and better all the time. And we've been encouraging everyone to go on to the thread after your review and start some dialogue there and post their reviews as well.
Yep, I've seen those, too. That's very cool.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, you know, after listening to this, go out and check out Craig's review, compare it. I'm sure he's got a lot more to say there as well, going in depth everything. So I'm excited to read it.
So Craig, I got to ask you real quick, and some of our listeners are probably wondering this too. After this discussion, how will this impact your version of Rebels Reconnaissance?
Well, I'll try not to let it do too much because I've got basically what I want to say. I just haven't quite fine-tuned it, but there will definitely be some things that I'll take in there from tonight's discussion. I'm not sure just yet. I'll let them marinate a little bit and then see how it comes out there. Yeah.
Very good. Marinate, another one of my favorites.
Yeah, just please use the verisimilitude in the
I'll see if I can work it in.
Yeah, please.
Part of your burgeoning reviews. Well, thanks again, Craig, so much, and we look forward to having you on again very soon.
All right, guys, sounds good.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coryc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torak on iTunes.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
Yo, everybody get up. Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost the sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.